part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm gonna do it part. I'm gonna do it part-time. I'm gonna do it part. I'm gonna do it part-time. Fanboy.com.
All right. Well, maybe we could finally get started with this nonsense.
Let's get this going.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. This is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am Christian Horn, and I am finally on the line with Paul Edwards and Ian Scheller, and we are here to discuss, well, it's the Part-Time Fanboy Book Club.
Yeah.
And last time, I did one with Corey, and it was Kraven's Last Hunt from the Spider-Man books in the 80s. And mm-hmm. since Ian, what was the one that you just finished reading, the Frank Miller one?
Born Again.
Born Again. Yeah, so that kind of got me interested in Daredevil. And so I figured what would be an interesting stretch of Daredevil to read for us. You know, that was kind of, you know, well-respected or people liked. And I thought Kevin Smith would be good. The Guardian Devil arc.
That's right.
That's
the
right.
The first wave of Marvel Knights books.
Yes, yes, actually. Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because this was, hold on, I'm looking online. When was this originally published? It was, I think this is pre-9/11.
Yeah.
Definitely.
1998.
Uh-huh.
So this was published in 1998, and it was at a time, like, it was kind of like the tail end of the 90s, right? Which is, as everyone knows, for like Marvel and DC, like the 90s was the dark ages of comic books, I think, right?
That's right.
There was a lot of awful, awful stuff happening in Marvel and DC books at the time. And I think Joe Quesada and Jimmy Palmiotti were kind of given their own, I hope I pronounced his last name right, Jimmy Palmiotti. They were kind of given free reign over the sort of street level heroes,
mm-hmm.
right? Like sort of second stringers.
Yeah, yeah. You had Moon Knight, Daredevil, Black Panther.
That's right. Black mm-hmm. Panther. I forgot. So this was at a time where Marvel was kind of struggling. I think they'd maybe like pulled out of bankruptcy, right? Or just avoided bankruptcy like years before.
Well, yeah. I know that when they launched the Marvel Knights thing, that was around like 2006, like when they announced it. And what they wanted to do was basically...
Wait, how could it be 2006? It's 1998.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the. I hit the date wrong, but yeah, that's when they moved them over to the Marvel Universe. But like, I remember that the idea behind Marvel Knights was that they would sort of be like limited series kind of things. You know, they would be like a little more edgy, a little more, you know, yeah, like you were saying, down to earth, and they would be all. It'd be focused on the limited series.
Yeah. Well, and some of them would be also more adult-oriented, right? Like grittier.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. In the long run, I think they did like a Nick Fury book that was very sort of adult-oriented. And the Punisher definitely kind of like, you know, yeah. what the Garth Ennis yeah, run of the yeah. Punisher was That's under right. that reign.
Well, prior to that, they had that Punisher where he died and was resurrected.
Oh my God!
And he was fighting supernatural things, and that was
that's
part of
right.
Marvel Knights thing too. Yeah.
Was that a Marvel Knights thing, the supernatural thing?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, I thought the Garth Ennis thing. I guess the Garth Ennis thing came later.
Yeah, yes. Garth Ennis was later because he started having like great success pretty much everywhere.
With Preacher, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I think these books, too, with the Joe Quesada stuff was, at least according to the story of the Marvel Universe book, was to get more people from, like, movies to be writing books.
Oh, that's interesting.
And they wanted to kind of pluck more of a Hollywood vibe and that kind of thing into the Marvel Knights stuff.
Yeah. Well, I know that it was the very big thing was that they were given the big sort of announcement was that they were given Joe Quesada, like who had mostly done like sort of independent, you know, books. I think he had done a certain amount of stuff for Marvel, you know, for sure before then. But this was before he became like editor in chief. This was kind of like his sort of trial run, you know? And this, I think it was the success of these books that made Marvel look at him and go, hey, maybe this guy could run the whole kit and caboodle. Right. So Quesada had come to know Kevin Smith. Right. And I don't know the exact story, but from what I understand, maybe at Comic-Con, maybe at a comic convention, like Joe Quesada basically kind of offered Kevin Smith Daredevil or a book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Daredevil being the natural choice because, you know, he's Catholic. So,
yeah,
you know, so this one came out with, the first one was November of, 1998, right?
Wow. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I remember when this came out, you know, I remember like the big deal because this I think this was Kevin Smith's very first comic writing assignment, right?
If it wasn't, it's certainly, you know, his most high profile to that point.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, it was a very big splash because obviously he had made waves and endeared himself to comic fans through his movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know. I think people were kind of like, what? Like a Hollywood screenwriter, a guy who's made it in Hollywood is going to write comics. And then, you know, which, as you said, Paul, was probably part of Quesada's idea, which was to get people going, talking about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you know, like I said, tail end of the 90s, things weren't going so well for Marvel financially. The books were kind of in a rut. You sort of had the Clone Saga, I think, was kind of like coming to an end. I don't know if it was coming to an end or the middle of it. But I remember all this sort of stuff starting to percolate and that the Daredevil thing was a big deal. So and I remember kind of being excited to check it out because I liked Kevin Smith back then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean... not that I don't like him now. I actually really do like the guy. I think he's kind of sort of a genius in his own way. You know, he's been very successful and, you know, I know that I listen to some of his podcasts and what are some of your guys' feelings about Kevin Smith, like in general?
Oh, well, I couldn't stand Clerks. I thought it was horrific.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't know what the big deal was at all.
Huh.
And I've never liked that other... I tried that other one with the duty monster in it. What was that called?
That was the religious one, Dogma.
Dogma.
Yeah, that was almost as unbearable as I thought Clerks was. I really think the guy is an overachiever. I think he's talented for what he does, and I can't... you know, begrudge him because the guy's done a ton of work, but every time I've heard him talk about film or anything, it sounds like, I don't know, none of it ever makes sense to me. Like he's happy to be ignorant about it. Maybe that's the best way to go about it, but I've never been a real big fan. I think his Comic Book Men show is probably the best thing he's ever done.
Huh? Really?
Actually, yeah. Cause he seems perfect to just be a guy to sit around and talk about comics. I gotta say, I love Fat Man on Batman. That's pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah.
That's actually amazing. So
yeah.
I can't say I dislike everything the guy's done, but not a huge fan.
So you're not a huge fan. What about you, Paul? What are some of your thoughts on the man, the myth?
I love Chasing Amy. Chasing Amy is a great movie.
Yeah, I love Chasing Amy, too.
That, you know, like, I think all the way around, like, that's far and away his best movie. It's, you know, sort of the most heartfelt. It's, you know, it's funny without trying too hard. You know, it's very character oriented and it's really natural too. You know, honestly, until Gone Girl, I think it's probably Ben Affleck's best, you know, best acting performance.
Yeah.
It's just really, really Yeah, I think he's a super talented writer. I think one of the problems that that happens in his movies is that, you know, all of his characters tend to sound like him, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, when he write, his movies are definitely like films in the sense of, like, you know, they're characters and they're scripted, and, you know, it's very almost like he's shooting a play, you know. You know, yeah, I think that he's got some. I actually really love a lot of Dogma. Clerks, you know, I like Clerks, but not, you know, not a whole lot. I think Chasing Amy was the first one that was like, wow, you know, this guy's really got something going on. He understands, you know, he understands relationships and how messed up they can be. And, you know, I think that was what I was really excited about going into this Daredevil thing, is that, you know, Daredevil's got, you know, very complicated relationships.
And, yeah.
You know, that's really sort of what the whole thing turns into, is, you know, it's an examination of Matt Murdock and his relationships throughout the years. And I think one of the things that's really cool about the Daredevil series is that for the first time, it was the characters sort of had their own voice, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that he's probably more talented as a writer than he is as, you know, maybe a director per se.
Yeah.
Know? But, you know, I respect the dude and everything that he's, you know, that he's built up. He's a hard worker.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan, you know, and I mean, I'm not so much a big fan of, like, all his movies, you know, but I think that you look at, like, everything that he's achieved, and I just find it, like, really, really impressive, you know what I mean? And I don't think that he, and there have been so many times in his career, like, look, when I saw Clerks, you know, there was all this hype about it, and that all these things, you know, were being said, and, you know, this guy maxed out his credit cards to $30,000. And, you know, that was during the 90s where all these, like, indie films were being given a shot, you know what I mean? And I was acting then, and, you know, I was very interested in sort of, like, finding movies or projects to sort of, like, get in the ground floor on, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That was sort of the goal. And I went to see Clerks, and I was just, like, obviously not technically proficient, you know, but still very impressive in the relationships, in the sort of feel of New Jersey, me, you know, having grown up in New Jersey, you know, I understood it, and it made me laugh, and I thought it was funny. And quite honestly, you know, as bad as it was technically to a certain extent, you know, the limitations that it had, it was much better than it had any business being, you know what I mean? And then I saw Mallrats, and I was like, oh, this was not good. Like, I remember really distinctly disliking Mallrats, and then Chasing Amy came out. It seems like Kevin Smith is, like, as far as a lot of his movies concerned or his projects are concerned, he's really good at sort of, like, rebuilding himself. You know what I mean? Like, you look at something like, say, Red State.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people were not really interested in his movie making. I mean, he did what was that, Cop Out with Bruce Willis, which was apparently just, like, a disaster, you know, for him to make. And he'd made a couple of other bombs or, you know, not really great successes. And then, you know, he decides, like, I'm going to make a horror movie. And at least in my opinion, I think he did a fantastic job with Red State. I was very impressed, and I felt like this was a guy who was trying to, you know, change something about what he was doing and sort of improve upon himself, you know? Mm-hmm. I felt like Kevin Smith, the problem with Kevin Smith, and I stopped watching his movies after Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, is that I felt like he was just writing about the same thing over and over and over and over again, and there wasn't a lot of newness coming out of it, you know? So I'd kind of given up on Kevin Smith for a while, and then a friend of mine at work said he was doing podcasts, And I was like, what? Podcasts? Like, what's that? You know? Mm-hmm. And I started listening to them, and I gotta say, like, he made me laugh. You know, his Smodcast stuff made me laugh at work, you know? And quite honestly, he's like one of the big, he is probably, him and, you know, the Nerdist are probably two of the biggest inspirations for me, kind of like wanting to even get started on this. So yeah. I'm a fan, you know, I can't, he's not perfect. You know, he doesn't do everything right, but at the same time, he's the first to admit it, you know?
Well, let's talk about the actual book.
Because, yeah.
You know, that's, you know, it was a big achievement, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty impressed with it.
It was an 8-issue limited series, and
Daredevil was ongoing, but he right. only did 8 issues. Yeah.
Right, but this was an 8-issue thing sort of outside of, you know, Daredevil. You know, it was the Kevin Smith Daredevil story.
Yeah, yeah.
And it really sort of plays in a way like a greatest hits of Daredevil.
Yeah.
Yeah, it opens up at the beginning, you know, with a great little sort of recap, a 2-page recap of, you know, Daredevil up to that point.
Yeah.
Then it jumps right into a letter where Karen Page basically dumps Matt Murdock, Daredevil.
Yeah. Yeah, she had left to go be a DJ in L.A., And was doing a radio show. So basically Matt Murdock, once again, kind of treated badly by the women that surround him. And he's kind of on his own. And he's sad and lonely at that point. Right? Ian, what were some of your first impressions?
Well, it was interesting because this book marked the first digital comic I've ever read.
Oh, really?
Yeah, believe it or not. So that in of itself was interesting. Once I started getting into it, it became a lot easier, obviously, because I was figuring out software and how to actually read the book. But I don't, maybe coming off of Born Again, which I was completely engrossed with, both, you know, the draftsmanship and the kind of just gritty Frank Miller stuff, this seemed a lot lighter, even though it was still dealing with pretty serious, you know, topics. The look of the book to me was much more like it just seemed happier and rounder and softer.
It's got a very cartoony look to it.
Yeah,
yeah,
so a lot of the gravitas of, and you know, it's weird, that guy's such a talented artist, and
he's amazing,
and but I recognize the incredible talent there, but I don't know if I've ever really liked it, because I read his run on the Azrael stuff with Batman.
Oh, and then, yeah, but that's old.
I even collected his stuff when he did Ninjak for Valiant.
That's right, that's right.
And I actually like the Ninjak stuff the best, actually, but I was having just trouble getting into the book. I felt like there were a ton of references about, especially Born, like what Paul's saying, like a best hits kind of thing. And I'm like, where exactly are we going? I didn't get into the story until at least, I'd say, 3 or 4, book 3 or 4, when he was getting kidnapped by that big guy, and he was locked in that room.
Yeah,
I love that. But there were some amazing segments to the book, you know?
Yeah.
So essentially the setup on it is, you know, he's been dumped, and he rescues this girl who's about to be run over by a car. A girl's carrying a baby.
Yeah.
And... you know, the setup is basically him intervening into this girl's life.
Yes.
And finding out about, you know, the baby. The baby appears to be a supernatural being.
Yeah. Well, I mean, basically what you end up finding out is that the young lady believes that she's carrying sort of like a miracle birth, a virgin birth. That she had a baby, and she claims that she's never, you know, had sex. And, you know, what you've got is sort of like, this is the miracle child. And at the same time, or this is the second coming. And at the same time, he's approached by an old man, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who is sort of very mystical, kind of strange, you know, Daredevil Matt Murdock can't really get a read on him. But this guy claims that the child is the Antichrist.
Right.
Right. And so from there, you've basically got a lot of stuff messing with Murdock's head. He's already in a bad space, you know, because Karen Page dumped him and left him. And at this point, you know, now you've got, you know, obviously you're living in the Marvel universe, right? So
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of crazy stuff that can happen. So he's already open to sort of having that belief. I don't know at this point, is he a lapsed Catholic or is he practicing? I don't even know that they say, but
yeah, he seemed kind of ambivalent, no?
Yeah.
But I mean, but he's definitely, you know, the product of a Catholic.
Yeah, upbringing, you know,
family,
for sure.
For sure.
No and, question. There was no dreidels or Quran anywhere.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
It's, you know, but, you know, that's the setup for the story, is that it is 8 issues of someone messing with his head, starting with his religious beliefs.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a really sort of an interesting in, you know, I love the idea that, like, okay, if you're going to really, like, if you're going to be a supervillain and you're going to try to undo someone, where do you start, you know?
Yeah.
And in this case, you know, they're definitely going after the things that he's sort of insecure about. He's insecure about his faith. He's insecure about his relationships, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, like, that's the stuff that ends up, you know, sort of that could break him, you know?
Yeah.
It's really interesting. It's like he's billed as, like, the man without fear, and he's not afraid, but it's like he's the reason that he's not afraid is because, you know, he is afraid. I mean, it's really interesting because I feel like, you know, he comes across as a sort of insecure, fearful, you know, person inside, and, like, Daredevil is sort of a projection, you know, that he puts out of, like, no, I'm not afraid of anything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, the dichotomy that, you know, you've got with Daredevil, because he's a lawyer and he, at the same time, he goes out at night and beats the hell out of, you know, bad guys, you know what I mean? And, you know, he was raised Catholic, and at the same time, he goes out at night and dresses as a devil and beats the hell out of bad guys, you know? So
yeah.
It's like his costume persona is so different than what his secret identity should be, you know?
Yeah.
Or so adverse to everything that he's supposed to believe. So that is, like, a really interesting facet of his character, you know, that Daredevil, the superhero, if you were to meet, like, Matt Murdock, who's a lawyer, upstanding member of the community, criminal defense lawyer, you know, right. What I'm saying? Basically, you've got a situation where there's no way in the world that they should be tied together, but they are the same person. And yeah, it's really interesting. And what I found really fascinating about the series, especially with the way it begins, is that it really does, you know, this being Marvel Comics, this being comics, you're very open to the possibilities, you know,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, like, if this were just a movie about a guy and then somebody shows up and, oh, look, virgin birth, you know, Antichrist, you might be a little bit like, oh, yeah, I don't know what's going on here. But in the Marvel Universe, it's like, huh, this could be real. So you're sort
right.
of like him. You're sort of like, okay. And there's no hint of any kind of, like, anything else, you know?
Right,
in the
right.
beginning, it's very much like, hey, this is what's happening, and it's very straightforward, and you're not getting any clues to the fact that, like, except for the fact that he's a street-level hero, you know,
right.
That there's any kind of, like, bamboozling going on. You know what
right.
I mean?
You know, in the second issue, you're immediately introduced to Black Widow.
Yeah.
Who, I really think that the current Marvel Universe version, you know, certainly from the movies, owes a lot to this limited series. To the way Kevin Smith wrote her.
Oh, interesting.
She's really funny, you know. She's, you know, definitely, you know, she's sort of in charge. I mean, you know, I hadn't really seen her, you know, as an A-lister necessarily before this book.
Oh, really? Yeah. I was never like a big Black Widow fan or anything. Mm-hmm. Like, she's never been an A-lister. If anything, she was like C or D-list. She started off as a villain. But I thought like this was a very, they did a really good job of like, delving into their relationship. You know what I mean? Because at first glance, you sort of get the feeling that they were just kind of like messing around. Like it was never really that serious, but there's you sort of do break through to a tenderness on her side, right?
Oh, totally.
I think so. I think too, with the part with the baby, that frame where the baby's taking off her wristlet.
Yeah.
That was really awesome. I mean, as far as getting across just the sensitivity of the whole entire moment, you know?
Yeah.
And when he leaves her, you know, when he basically leaves her, this baby in her care, you know, and runs out, you know, and her response of, you know, I was an Avenger.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, it's really funny. I mean, it's exactly, she's funny. She's there basically because she's worried about him. And, it's really cool that, like, out of everyone, you know, out of all of his past girlfriends and everything, she's the one who really sort of gets him in terms of a friend, you know?
Yeah, and sort of stands by him when he needs it and is able to, sort of has the strength to, like, stand along with him. So, I mean, since we're talking about Black Widow, what about Karen Page? Because this is sort of, you know, they set it up that she's left him, but then she returns.
Yeah, she comes back at the end of the second issue.
Yeah.
I don't know about this. I mean,
I knew Ian had sort of.
Well, because I remember when I started Born Again, I was really confused because by the time I got to the end of it, I was like, why did he do all this for this Karen Page? And you explained to me, like, hey, Karen Page is a serious character in his life, and he would do anything for this woman. So. Now, this is...
Well, I believe you said to me, Ian said to me, why does Daredevil care about this junkie?
Right. And then, so, again, it's like kind of confirmed where it's like, is this character, you know, she's kind of being written on that same trajectory. I thought there was a ton of Born Again stuff in the book, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, and I'm just like, oh, here we go again.
But, you know, again, I think that sort of ties back to the Catholicism too, you know, because like it's the idea of like nobody being beyond redemption.
Yeah.
That's a very important concept for him.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I said to Ian. And I think I said that to you is it's a very big theme that runs through Daredevil and has run through Daredevil is the idea of being forgiven for your sins and, you know, being, you know, sort of like trying to rise above, you know, your worst self, you know what I mean? And trying to have that understanding with everyone else. Cause it does tie back into his character because I think like deep down in Daredevil, there is a sort of like dark guilt that he has because obviously, again, it's almost like a split personality where he's the lawyer and he's defending criminals by day, but at night, you know, he's a vigilante. And so I think that that's part of his darkness and that he has to sort of almost forgive himself every night that he comes back, you know, from going on patrol.
And of course, Karen Page, when she does come back, it's revealed that
she's got a bomb.
AIDS.
Yes.
And I mean, it's a very, and it's that panel is so 90s, you know, I mean, you know, she's like standing there with the makeup crying, you know, and that's, she reveals that she has AIDS and her years of, you know, being
a porn star,
junkie whore, you know, have caught up with her.
Yeah.
Of course they would. But that's the funny thing is that point in the story is like Daredevil doesn't even really have time to think about that, does he? Because there's all this other stuff going on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's what's crazy about that part. Because I even forgot it a few times. I'm like, wait a minute, does she still have AIDS here? And then yeah. You know, we would be reminded of it. And it's like, well, that's the back burner story.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, the fact that she comes back and, you know, she drops that bomb, like, that was a big deal back then. That was like... Yeah. You know, nobody in comics, they didn't really talk about AIDS. Well, they didn't talk about any of that stuff.
There was that Dale Keown, Peter David episode of The Hulk, where the Hulk saved the young black man. And the young black man was HIV positive and bled all over the Hulk.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, and I remember them just dropping a line. It's like Hulk's like, "Yeah, my healing factor. Don't worry about me." And I'm like, "Really? Don't worry." and so the Hulk was fine, but that was the only other book that addressed, I think, that I've ever read.
Yeah, but I also think we're talking about like a major character. You're talking about Lois Lane, you know, showing up and being like, "Hey, I have AIDS."
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, this was a random guy created for the Hulk.
Exactly. So this was like a huge deal. And then there's also like threads running underneath is like where Matt Murdock is like, "Wait a minute." At one point, he does sort of get a moment of clarity, and he's like, "Did I get it? Like, do I have it?" So, you know, at this point, he's just totally being screwed with left and right by life, you know. But what's really funny is that you don't think anything's really out of the ordinary because it's like, Daredevil, you know, yeah. Like he's always got a really terrible life, you know, especially in his best runs by Frank Miller, you know, and a couple others. Daredevil, the comic, is usually at its best when he's being crapped on. You know what I mean? Yeah.
When he's being put through the ringer, you know, it's for some reason there's just something particularly like good about putting Matt Murdock. even more than Peter Parker. You know,
yeah.
I think, like Matt Murdock and Peter Parker are probably like the two most put upon people like in comics.
Yeah.
And I think it's does a lot of it because like that truly is like when they're at their best.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, and I think like someone like Matt Murdock and obviously Peter Parker, they're so good because they're so identifiable. Like as much as you like Batman, and as much as people are like, "Oh, Batman's so cool," blah 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 blah, he's still like a billionaire. You know, he's still got this giant cave. He's still, you know, he could probably buy his way out of any problem if he wanted to, but not Matt Murdock and not Spider-Man. And when Matt Murdock goes down, again, you've got that giant burden of guilt that he just always, that Catholic guilt that just burrows itself into him, you know? Yeah. And he's constantly, and that's the thing is, I don't think Matt Murdock is, you know, I mean, there's a parallel between him and Spider-Man, but he's also very different. Like, Spider-Man's kind of like a whiner, and Daredevil, I don't see him as a whiner. I see him as sort of like more morose. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like almost like tries to philosophize what's happening.
Yeah.
He tries to rationalize and figure it all out, and he always seems to be giving himself the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
But even going back to even parts of the book where he just keeps questioning, like, "Okay, wait a minute, this happened, then this," he's very logical.
Yeah.
And he keeps trying to just find a way that this makes sense. Like my head hurts because I was looking at the computer monitor for too long or something. It's interesting that way. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really funny because that it's another thing that I think Kevin Smith did well. He thinks like a lawyer. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's trying to justify everything. He's trying to balance everything. Not that I know exactly what a lawyer thinks like, but I'm just saying, you know.
I mean, it's definitely, you know, he's very concerned with justice.
Yeah.
And, you know, more so than any other character because, you know, that is it's his job all the time.
Yeah.
You know? And so he, I think that that's a super important part of him. And Kevin Smith really did balance out, you know, the courtroom, well, not necessarily a courtroom, but, you know, like sort of the legal office stuff versus the superhero stuff. You know, he spent probably, at least in the first like four issues or so,
he spent just as much time, you know, working cases as he does out on the street, if not more time.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting because I sort of want to bring up what you and I talked about, Paul, a long time ago about Kevin Smith when we're talking about the writing. It's very interesting to me, and I know it is to you, Paul, and I don't know if, you know, Ian can speak to this, but I feel like in his comic work, Kevin Smith's characters all have a very distinct, different voice. Like, you know, they all speak differently. They all have like a different attitude about them. But in his movies, or at least his early work, you didn't feel that a lot. And I wonder what your guys' thoughts are on that. Because, like, I think, like, his dialogue and his writing really shine in comics more so than movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I think part of it's definitely like the stakes for the character, because, you know, this is the first thing, this Daredevil thing was the first thing that he wrote where there were actual, like, sort of life and death consequences.
That's
for
true.
Any of the characters. And, like, you know, sort of that heightened drama really works well with his, you know, sort of wordy, you know, because he is this very wordy writer. You know, his characters talk a lot. They talk and talk and talk. You know, this actually gave him some action to balance out that talk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's really interesting. So as the story kind of progresses, you know, we start to see that somebody wants the baby, right? And they want him to hand it over. They're not just going to take it over because they actually want to kill the baby, which I found to be really kind of intense for a Marvel comic book, especially at the time where it was like, wait a minute, you've got bad guys that want to get the baby and then they want to kill the baby? Like, and Daredevil actually, you know, that I feel like the characterization in this book is so good because Daredevil gets messed with so much, and his and one of the justifications that's given to him is that why you have to give us the baby, this organization or this old guy, you know, saying that they want to kill the Antichrist, is because the more you have the baby around, the more it's going to mess with your life. And as soon as the baby enters Matt Murdock's life, he's just constantly getting screwed with, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I think they want to kill that baby because at that point they hadn't sold the millions of books that those X-Men books did. So
I don't think so.
Well, and that's certainly, you know, what they sell Karen on.
Yeah.
You know, like they really they meet with Karen and you know they tell her essentially what you just did and
yeah, behind, you know, his back.
They really give her the hard sell on, like, hey, you know, this punishment, you know, has to do with the baby, you know, the fact that you have AIDS, it has, yeah, and, you know, she sort of falls for it. She's like, okay, you know, let's give it to him.
Yeah, which really plays into her character as well, because, I mean, as Ian said, I mean, you know, if you go back to, like, Born Again and even before that, she's never been sort of the strongest character to stand on her own. So there's a part of me that really does believe that she would be like, all right, let's get this baby. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obviously something's going on, so I've got to get the baby. And it doesn't matter what Daredevil thinks. You know what I mean? So at that point, you know, you've got like a really sort of, like for a superhero book, a really sort of like crisis of conscience, because it's like, do I hand this kid over? And at one point they even play with Daredevil thinking about seriously handing the kid over.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of loses his stuff on Black Widow trying to get the baby, right?
Right.
Like, he loses it. And she basically, you know, is like, what are you, insane? There's no way I'm giving you the baby to hand over to the people, the creepy people, you know?
So midway down, though, that fall, he's falling down the building. He actually stops himself, right? And says, wait, what am I doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But before that, he totally has lost his mind. And
yes.
And I think that is when he starts to suspect that, oh, wait a minute, you know, I'm being messed with. Like, I can't
like
think
I
clearly.
Always am.
Yeah, exactly.
It's happening again.
Somebody's messing with me, and this is way beyond some sort of mystical thing, right? And he even at one point goes to Doctor Strange.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I thought was like a great part. Great point.
That was a great part of the book.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah, because at the after he's taken the baby, Karen comes to him and says, everything's gonna be fine if you just give him the baby, and he has a really sort of intense falling out with her too.
Yeah.
He's like, basically it's your responsibility. You have AIDS because you were a junkie.
Yeah.
Like you've messed everything up. And then of course, because it's Daredevil, we bring Bullseye.
Yeah.
At the end of that, and you realize, oh yeah, like they're definitely. You're halfway through the run, and now, like, you get your first sort of concrete proof that yes, somebody is out to do this to Matt Murdock.
Yeah, yeah. Like something different is going on. Like at first, it started off like almost a mystic thing, that almost a religious thing, some crazy otherworldly happenings. And then, and he even goes to, like I said, Doctor Strange, and they actually speak to Mephisto, which I found really interesting. It's really interesting, Paul, that you said Daredevil's greatest hits, because there is an amazing run that is completely bizarre that Ann Nocenti wrote and John Romita Jr. Drew, I think in the 90s, where Daredevil actually goes to hell and meets Mephisto. And now that you said that, like, oh, this is a greatest hits, like, that was a really smart way of Kevin Smith being like, oh, I'm going to, like, introduce all these elements throughout the years. And he even found a way to get Mephisto in there, which is a great run of Daredevil, but is the craziest, most out-of-the-box, one of the craziest, most... I mean, obviously, there have been some highs and lows in the history of Daredevil, but... I have to say that him, like, meeting Mephisto and, like, going to hell, like, has to be one of the weirder things that, a street fighting hero would ever do,
And it's great because when he does go to Doctor Strange, like, Doctor Strange has this great, like, sort of calming effect on him too, Like he lets him know, oh, you've been poisoned for one thing, you've been drugged, which is why part of why he went off on the Black Widow.
Yeah.
He's like, mystically that nothing's been going on. They did a Marvel Knights miniseries with Doctor Strange too. And I think this is like sort of the second period where I really fell in love with Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Because like he was just, so it was so cool and so weird.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. And again, going back to Kevin Smith's writing, is I really feel that he has a handle on each character. And like on Doctor Strange, he had a handle on him. On, Daredevil, he has a handle on him. On Karen Page, he's got a really good handle on Karen Page, I thought. And like you said, Black Widow. I feel like each voice is distinct. Each voice is speaking from its own experience, and like I really think that Kevin Smith was fantastic in that. I mean, even in the Born Again runs and the Daredevil runs, as fantastic as they are and as great as the pacing is, Frank Miller, there is a sameness of voice, there isn't a lot of variety as far as I believe, like, in the dialogue. But with Kevin Smith, when I was reading this comic, I really felt like, oh, I'm reading Karen Page now. Oh, I'm reading, Matt Murdock now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He actually does a really good job with Mephisto.
Yeah!
Mephisto's just sort of amused, in a way, by this whole thing, there is a great little moment where he's like, oh, Matt Murdock's like, oh, he doesn't remember me.
Yeah.
Mephisto sort of like sets him straight. He's like, no, like clearly this is no, while setting his mind at ease about, this child not being a supernatural thing, Mephisto also finds a little turn of phrase at the end of it to stick it to him.
Just to screw him a little bit.
Just to mess with him.
Yeah. And what's funny again is when you see Mephisto, he looks exactly like he did in the Annocenti run. You know, in the run where he sort of looks like some weird horse with bristly, like crazy hair or a lion's mane or whatever that is. Yeah.
Hades visor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I remember that run and being like, why does Mephisto look like this? He doesn't look like he has it in the comics before, but yeah, it's interesting. So, I mean, as you continue along, you know, Bullseye eventually shows up, right? Oh, and we didn't even mention, like, Matt Murdock going to see his mom.
Oh, yeah. His mom's a nun.
Yeah, his mom's a nun, which, you know, obviously that would mess anybody up if your mom left your dad and abandoned you and, you know, went off to join a convent and become a nun. But, like, yeah, when Daredevil, I almost called him Daredoc. basically, when Daredevil, you know, gets into sort of crisis mode, he decides, like, oh, I'm going to go back to the beginning. He has kind of like a weird heart-to-heart with his mom. And, you know, Karen Page gets convinced to, you know, hand the baby over. And then when she does confront Matt, you know, it's at the gym, right? Is it? At his gym or is it at the church? I can't remember.
It's at the church.
It's at the church. Yeah, that's right. And then what happens?
Bullseye shows up to the church and pretty much slaughters everybody in it.
Yes.
did Bullseye flick his tooth as a weapon?
Yes.
Yeah.
That blew my mind.
That's why he's Bullseye.
That didn't hurt him?
It might have, but I think if you're a supervillain that's crazy enough and desperate enough, you're going to do whatever, right?
Yeah, well, what happened is, you know, Daredevil had knocked the teeth out, basically, with the baton. He had thrown it, hit him in the baton, his teeth had already fallen out, so he took his teeth and just sort of flicked them at him, and they stick inside of the baton. It's a really cool thing, you know, I'm always entertained by what people give Bullseye as weapons.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's killed everyone with everything, you know, but the teeth were a new one.
Yeah. Yeah. The teeth was new and it was, I felt really smart, you know, again, crafty Kevin Smith coming up with, you know, something different, you know, but he slaughters everyone. And then eventually he kills Karen too.
Yeah.
By accident. Right. Was it?
No, I think that was pretty on purpose.
You think he was trying to kill Karen?
Well,
because she jumps in the way.
Yeah, he was trying to kill, you know, Matt. But I had, you know, the way it's framed in there, she's standing right there.
Yeah,
it looks like he threw it basically into her.
Knowing that she'd get in the way.
Well, I feel like he just did it. In a way, just to mess with Matt.
Yeah. Which, you know, obviously it does. You know, she gets killed. And
well, then he doesn't have to worry about that AIDS thing anymore.
What do you mean? He could still have it. It's not like if the person that gave it to you
Bullseye
died.
Didn't kill it with a throwing dart.
I don't know. But, you know, that's the thing with Bullseye. I mean, they sort of... Didn't Bullseye kill Elektra too?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, Bullseye's basically, his big main goal in life is to kill Daredevil's girlfriends, I think, you know. But yeah, I thought that was a really powerful scene, and I thought it was really well drawn too.
Yeah, and it certainly sends him into an even greater tailspin.
Yes.
You know?
Would.
Every time you feel like, oh, you know he's coming back, you know, you know, he's figured it out, he's coming back,
yeah,
and then they find a way to like knock him down even lower,
they just drag him more through the mud.
Which again, like, that's good writing, you know. Kevin Smith really knew what he was doing.
Now that we're talking about this and it's all coming back to me, I realize I enjoyed this book a little more than I thought I did.
Why?
Well, it was so dense, you know. It was like there was a lot of stuff that I just read and I realized, whatever. But, you know, actually recapping it is actually helping me put it together better, because I actually thought it was quite fragmented, but it's like it does have the right beats in the right places.
Yeah.
doesn't it?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think that Paul and I have read more Daredevil comics than you have. And I think that Smith was very smart in playing to the Daredevil crowd. Obviously, it's a Daredevil book, you know.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, Kevin Smith, you know, loved the Frank Miller Daredevil stuff, you know. So, and who didn't? Whoever's read it, you know, loves it, right? I mean, and deservedly so, because Frank Miller did an amazing job and was a trailblazer at a time where people weren't doing what he was doing in comics. So I think that, that Kevin Smith really did serve up a really great sort of like action and and morality tale at the same time serving up a platter to like Daredevil fans, you know?
Yeah, this whole thing felt like a movie, like a comic by a fan for fans in the best way.
Yeah.
You know, not in the sense of like, ooh, look, you know, look how jokey I'm going to be. Look how many, you know, jokes I'm going to tell and how many references I'm going to drop, you know, like, you know, it's like, hey, I know I love this. You know, you love it. This is why we love it. So let's tell a story that like hits all those points.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't need those Batman references.
Well, I think he was just sticking in as much stuff as he could. He definitely stuck in some references throughout the book about like lots of different things.
Well, there's there's one the Ennis Tavern.
Yeah.
You know, little things like that. Yeah, little.
Was there?
Little
there fun. Was a Superman reference at one point too. I think I caught right.
Like, I don't
didn't
know.
Somebody say Clark come here, and somebody was in the background, and there's a guy wearing glasses, or Joe Quesada drew him in a panel somewhere or something. Huh. I'm not That's sure. Fun.
That's fun because there was actually a Superman reference back in like an earlier Daredevil thing where Black Widow was talking with him, and this was like on a different run, like back in the early 80s or something.
Oh, really?
She's like, you're not a what's the word? She's like a Ubermensch, and he's like a Superman. No, I'm not a Superman.
That's great.
Yeah, it's like again, and which sort of brings it back to like he is. Like super human, not superhuman. He's super human.
Yeah.
He gets beat up a lot.
Yeah.
He hurts a lot, and he spends, you know, a great deal of this series just getting not just emotionally torn down, but he gets physically beat up pretty bad too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's another thing that I love about Daredevil is, you know, he's got the heightened senses, but that's it. You know, he's not like Captain America. He's not like Spider-Man. He's not even Batman. Batman has been like around the world and trained with like different people. I mean, Daredevil's trained with like Stick, right? But
he's a ninja, you know. I mean, let's give him that. He's a comic book ninja.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
You know, so in a way he's like similar to Bruce Wayne in terms of, you know, like the fighting and everything.
Yeah.
But he just doesn't have like the technological resources that a Batman does. Yeah.
Well, and also the physical resources that somebody like Spider-Man or even Captain America, you know, is supposed to have. So, yeah, I mean, basically,
he's not super strong.
Yeah, he's just like he's a guy who trains and stuff like that. But you know, in the end, I don't think that he's sort of as well trained as like Batman. I almost think like he's. Like physically speaking, probably like the lowest man on the totem pole. You know what I mean? You know, even Iron Fist and Power Man are probably stronger. And you know what I mean? Than he is. So it's really interesting because the more we talk about it, the more I see Daredevil as being almost like an everyman. You know, in the comics. You know, everyone says that Peter Parker is, but you know, Daredevil and he's blind. You know, which is something that we never talked about. I like in this series, I felt like Quesada did a really great job of drawing him, you know, because you would see him without the glasses and he would have that sort of, you know, the eyes like that blind people do. And you've never really seen that before, you know, in Daredevil comics. At least I hadn't, you know.
Yeah. Did you see when you were reading this the first time? Did you see the big bad?
coming? Did you know?
No way.
That's almost like impossible.
Not at all.
Did you know that, Paul?
No, I had no idea. But
no way.
I kept saying, I'm like, who the heck? Because it's like...
When he finally appears, though, it's just like, oh, man, of course.
And yeah.
If anything, like, we should praise this book for making Mysterio
a
believable bad guy, you know?
Yes.
Well, yeah, that book, that was pretty much a one-shot on his origin, and I love that.
Yeah.
That part of it.
Yeah. Well, it's really funny because, again, Smith is really smart because he plays into that sort of thing, like, Batman fights the Joker, Superman fights Lex Luthor, Captain America fights the Reds. Everyone stays in their own little sandbox, right? But right. Kevin Smith sets up this whole big con scan, you know, spoilers for anyone who hasn't read it, this con artist scam, you know, where you think it's one thing, and then by the end of the book, you know, once the blinders are pulled off, you're like, oh my God. And it's the perfect person. And he's not a regular Daredevil villain. As a matter of fact, I don't think he's ever faced it. Oh, no. He says once he did with Spider-Man, like in a team-up, I think. Yeah. But you never would have called that a million miles away. And I think it's genius on Kevin Smith's part. I mean, just genius.
Yeah, because you're just – it is something that is unexpected but makes sense within the, you know, within the – terms of the Marvel universe.
Yeah, because there's so much crossover, you know, but at the same time we're such comic fans that we're such like, we don't expect like this big, well, A, we didn't expect a scam like the first couple issues, you know, anyway, up until maybe like I started suspecting something was wrong when he faces off against that guy in the white room,
right?
And there's sort of a hint of like, oh, this isn't all mystical. There's something technological because there was some sort of buzzing messing with his senses.
Great. That was awesome. That was the first time I was like, okay, this just got awesome.
Yeah. But I mean, that's definitely the first time I thought like, oh, this isn't all mystical. But for them to pull Mysterio out of their butts, like that's just genius, you know?
And for the reason when it goes through the thing of Mysterio and you discover everything about him that's been driving him, and that need you find that he's dying, you know.
Yeah,
and this is his dying, you know, act. He wanted to do a grand illusion, a grand you know, strike against his greatest foe, which is Spider-Man, but he can't because of the whole fucking cold.
Exactly.
Which is hilarious.
I know, it's great.
The fact that, like, even then, like, that Kevin Smith was able to, like, sort of, like, stick it to the clone side.
You know,
right as it was happening, you know?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was the... Well, before we go on, we should say, like, what exactly happens is basically Mysterio, a Spider-Man villain... who was basically always a theatrical character whose powers were based in illusion and trickery and, you know, magic and or fake magic, you know, stage magic.
Yeah.
Basically has been setting up this whole virgin birth baby from the beginning. Just everything that's been happening to him from the beginning. I mean, at one point, doesn't he even say that he faked Karen Page's results? On the AIDS test? So,
I think, he gave her the same hallucinogenic, right, that he gave Daredevil.
I'm not sure, but at one point he says, like, she didn't even think to go get a second test. What kind of idiot was she? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Backing up some of my
Exactly. So,
and a great, and, you know, again, a great moment, too. You discover, like, how was he able to, you know, pinpoint him with all this, you know, he got it from the Kingpin, you know?
Yeah.
He basically paid off the Kingpin to get as much information about Matt Murdock as he could.
Yep, you're right. Yeah. Yeah, because as we know from Born Again, the Kingpin is the one who knows everything about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does this great villain monologue, man. I love, as cliche as it is, man, when like you've got a good writer doing like a good monologue going on, you know, where they explain sort of the big scheme of things, it can be really fun.
Yeah.
And this is a really good one because I love this. I began to plot the greatest undoing of a man there ever was.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very theatrical, which is Mysterio.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, and the thing is you've got to give props to Quesada too. Once again, I mean, I don't think I've, you know, drooled over his stuff enough. I mean, I know that we've sort of said like it's a very different style than, you know, the Frank Miller stuff or Born or Mazzucchelli and Born Again, but still
it's so good.
And yeah.
He's just so effortlessly inventive
and so much detail. Yeah.
You know, like this was really my sort of introduction to Quesada. I mean,
oh really?
I hadn't really paid attention a lot to a great many artists on the Marvel side in a while. But like, you know, I remember really loving the art the first time and then rereading it, you know, now that I've, you know, been paying attention and especially thinking of in terms of this, like in a way, this is his audition for Marvel.
Yeah.
You know, this is his audition to run the whole shebang.
Yeah.
And
he puts everything into it.
And he does put everything. Not only does he put everything into it, but it's like, I would feel good about turning over a company to somebody who could do this.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Compositionally, he kills it. And then he does those like macro close-ups.
Yeah,
he'll get so close on something and it still makes sense. And I think it's he's awesome. The guy's awesome.
Yeah, and if you've seen any of his work lately, he's become much more sort of like, it's weird. Like, you know how like there's some old comic artists and their style doesn't advance or anything like that? Quesada's has. Like it's really interesting because he's a big wig at Marvel and he doesn't really draw regular books at all anymore, but you can tell that he's still like an artist at heart. Like he still wants to draw, you know what I mean? And when you see him draw, like these days, it's like absolutely breathtaking. Like I've seen like some of his artwork and I've just been like, wow, because it's just matured so much. You know what I mean? The anatomy is better. The line is better. Like he's amazing. Like obviously he's not pumping out a regular book. So you know, it's just like these pieces that he does every once in a while, but still like the thing that impressed me the most about, you know, this run was, how much he made it seem like Daredevil, like the leaping and the bounding and stuff was just so beautiful. You know, it seemed like so dynamic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I loved it. Anytime Daredevil was like leaping the rooftops, I was just like, oh, this is so great.
And especially, you know, as the Mysterio thing sort of draws to a close.
Yeah.
Like how basically everything turns into this weird colored swirling mist.
Yes.
On the background.
Yeah.
You know, and the color changes from panel to panel and, you know, it's really pretty, you know, the color palette is gorgeous, and the way Matt resolves Mysterio is fantastic because he becomes a lawyer.
Yeah,
you know, he handles it like a lawyer. In the big, you know, climax, it's not all about beating him up; it's about beating him with words.
Yeah,
and I really loved that.
Yeah, where he turns it around on him and he's like, "You're a joke. You'll never." Yeah.
Yeah. But not that he's a joke, that he's not original. Like that's what pains him so much.
That's what destroys
you. You're just not original. You know, you think that you're a master, but like, you know, you're a human Xerox at best.
Oh, you know?
You know, and to someone who's artistic, like hearing something like it's like, yes, that would destroy you.
Yeah, that and would
he
destroy
does.
You.
He destroys him. And really funny that like the last one that you did was Kraven's Last Hunt, the last book club thing that you did was Kraven's Last Hunt, because this one ends with Mysterio killing himself and saying I stole this too from Kraven.
Yeah,
it's the same ending.
Yeah,
which is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the whole thing was that the climax, first of all, and that cover to, I think it's, is it issue 7, the one right before the last one, where it's like Mysterio's helmet and like Daredevil's like kind of like screaming inside of it, or like his reflection or something, like pushing against it. Like, that's Quesada art, like at its best. I can't remember if it's the cover or one of the splash panels on the, I think it's the cover, but yeah, no, I mean, the thing is like Smith nailed it with this one, like especially yeah. The ending, like he stuck the landing. It was just like so awesome. It was like, bam. And just, I remember when the series came out and you asked me before, like if I saw, if the big bad was coming, and I'm like, no. And I just remember when it was revealed in the book, it was one of those moments in comics that you never forget, where it was like, oh, get out. Like, yeah. How did you do that? Like, you just totally pulled the wool over my eyes. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well done. Well, Ian, what did you think? Because, I mean, I don't think you're very much a Spider-Man fan or a Daredevil fan too much, right?
Spidey? No, I read the McFarlane Spider-Mans, and I, you know, read, like, Venom versus Spidey.
Yeah.
I like that. I mean, I'm definitely a huge Daredevil fan at this point. Definitely want to go read Brian Michael Bendis stuff.
Oh,
and
Definitely
want to read the Brubaker stuff. So I'm hooked. I mean, it was really good to read this and get the Mysterio stuff. I mean, I think that guy's insane. I mean, is that his real origin though, or did Kevin Smith shift it?
You know, I don't know enough about Mysterio to know, like,
it's pretty much who he is, you know?
Well, I think he started off in the 60s like a stage act, right?
Right.
And I think Kevin Smith may have updated it, you know, with the special effects and the Steven Spielberg and, you know, all that stuff.
He's always been a movie effects guy.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, in the end, you've basically got this amazing climax. There's a lot of, like, head messing, you know, around with, and then he basically blows his head off. But there's also a part of me that's like, is he really, did he or didn't he? You know what I mean? And that's the nature of Mysterio, because I think, like, literally like a month after this series ended, somebody else used Mysterio in a comic and they were like, wait, Mysterio died. And people were like, fans were like ticked off. Or did he? Yeah. So, I mean, as far as, like, I mean, Daredevil stories and comic stories, I really think this is, like, one of the big ones. I think it's up there, you know?
And what's also great about it, too, is, like, the 8th issue was pretty much just all emotional wrap-up of, like, the events of the issue, which is something that you rarely ever get to see in a comic book, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just them dealing with, like, the events of everything that's happened before. You've got Karen's funeral.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, basically Matt having to go around and apologize to everyone whose feelings he's had. And there's a great end there, you know, where he's talking to Black Widow and, you know, she basically, you know, calls him out on, you know,
what he did.
Being on what he did and, you know, and about being a, you know, being a bad boyfriend.
Yeah.
You know?
So guys, Karen Page doesn't come back after this, does she?
No, not as far as I know. Okay. I mean, not whenever I've been reading the books. I think she may be one of those, like, dead is dead sort of things. You know what I mean? But that's the thing too. I mean, the whole thing is Mysterio, right? So you could easily bring her back. You know what I mean? Like, the whole, that's Mysterio's whole thing is just messing with you, right? So maybe she's not dead. Maybe she's walking around in, like, Iowa somewhere, doesn't know who she is. You know, there's so many possibilities that like, if they brought her back, like, that would be one of the ones where I'd be like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, there's so many death in comic books these days that it doesn't really matter. You know what I mean? But then, I don't know, would Karen Page's return reduce the poignancy of, you know, the story? Who knows? I mean, they already screwed that up with bringing Mysterio back, right?
No, I don't. I feel like they should leave that alone.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, that's not up to me.
Yeah. Well, from here on, you should. I would definitely, Ian, if I were you, invest in one of the Brian Michael Bendis. Just go to the omnibus. Just okay. Go ahead. I mean, they're expensive. They're probably, but on Amazon, you could probably get them for a lot cheaper. But I mean, generally speaking, they tend to be like $100, $120, like the omnibuses. But
wow.
You will be getting, you know, on Amazon, you might be able to get it for 60, 70 or something like that. But, Yeah. You know, it's worth it. Like Bendis's run is really solid because you think that stuff starts to get messed up. Like it continues, you know what I mean? Like it goes on, you know?
Cool.
Yeah. So any other thoughts about Guardian Devil before we sign off or?
No, dude, I'm just really glad that we reread this one because, you know, it's a really solid book. And
yeah.
Man, I am more pumped than ever over the Daredevil television show.
Oh, me too.
Can't wait. Cannot wait.
This got me very excited for it.
Yeah. The thing is like Daredevil has had some really good runs and I've always been a fan. Like in the Marvel universe, he's been one of my favorite characters. Just because of the fact of how tortured he is, you know what I mean? And you know, quite honestly, as a kid, I remember just being like, he's blind? Like that is such a great hook that Stan Lee came up with, you know what I mean? That, you know, it's really fantastic. So I'm really glad that like you, Paul, that we sat down and read this one. And now I'm going to have to, you know, read some more, try and track down like all my older issues. Cause I really want to read that Anne Nesenti run again. Cause it's crazy. Yeah. Like this, I think the Silver Surfer shows up and I just remember being a teenager being like, what is happening here? You know what I mean? This is not what I expected. So I don't know. What about you, Ian? What are some of your final thoughts?
I just, it's good. I'm glad I got to actually talk it through. So I thought I didn't understand most of it, honestly.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely was eye opening. And I think, like I said, I'm definitely going to continue. And whether it's that old one, I mean, I would love to read that old one you said with that written by Anne Nesenti, especially after reading about her. In this book. Yeah.
Marvel, the Untold Story book.
Yeah. So I'm kind of deciding where to go. I actually finished that book tonight. I'm on the acknowledgments and the afterword. And
it's a great book.
Oh my God. It's just so depressing in some ways.
But it's a great book.
But it's weird too. The guy ends off with a smiling picture of Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. It's like,
yeah, I know.
I don't know what to think right now, but, yeah, final thoughts are good. You know, it's great. And so hopefully we could pick a new book and do this again.
Yeah, definitely. I've got some ideas as to what maybe we should do some indie books next time.
Oh, cool. That'd be great.
Or maybe something DC since we've done two Marvel. I don't know. But yeah, no. Well, thanks for doing this, guys. This has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy where we've analyzed Kevin Smith's Guardian Devil and Joe Quesada's. Do not leave Joe Quesada out. He is such a huge part of this.
Or Jimmy Palmiotti.
That's true.
He did a great job inking this book.
He did do a great job inking. So, yeah, once again, Guardian Devil, Marvel, pick it up. You can easily get it on Amazon. And my name is Christian Horn. I'm here with Paul Edwards and Ian Scheller. And have a happy Thanksgiving.
Yep.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing. I'm doing part-time. Part-timefanboy.com.